Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
All right, this interview had kind of been a long time coming to talk to a tanker about tank stuff, and so we're going to do that. Joining me from the East Coast, the Fredericksburg area, the Northern Virginia area, is Major J.R. Vlasic. So, J.R., first of all, good morning. Welcome to All Marine Radio. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, and thank you for having me. It's an absolute honor being on here. You got me?
I got you.
Excellent. All right.
All right. We're slowly but surely figuring this out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He's got a great microphone, by the way. It's what kind is it? It's a snowball microphone?
No, nah, it's a Blue Yeti.
Blue Yeti. Right. They're very popular, and as everybody can hear, they sound great. But we were messing with it yesterday. And right away, I said, okay, look, man, something's wrong. I said, you're talking into your microphone. You're on a laptop, aren't you? You got to select, go into Skype. And he was like, whoa. It was pretty I have to say, I even impressed myself.
Difference between a professional and an amateur.
There you go. There you go. Make me look good. All right, first of all, Jared, let's learn about you. We know you're a tanker, so you're on the endangered species list. But let's talk about you. Born and raised where?
In Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. How about my Steelers? Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, undefeated team in the NFL, right?
Exactly. And even more important, they beat the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, huge win. Huge win.
How much do you guys hate each other?
About as much as anybody possibly can.
Yeah, that's irrational hate, isn't it?
I was walking across a parking lot with my wife just the other day, right before the game, and I had a Pittsburgh mask on, you know, representing the Pittsburgh team on the COVID front. And guy stops, I mean, just stops in the parking lot, rolls down his window. He's like, "Hey," and I'm like, "What the heck is this?" It's like, "Yeah, what can I do for you?" He's like, "You got the wrong mask on." He's like, "You know, black and gold, not in this town, buddy, not in this town." I'm like, I look, and his car is absolutely decked out for Ravens from top to bottom. I'm like, well, we'll see on Sunday, man.
Yeah, no, I'm a 49er fan, and we have one of those hate relationships with Seattle. And right. they kicked our ass, and, you know, 49ers have had awful injuries this year. But let me just tell you, it's awful, man. When your rival like that just lays the wood to you, just sucks. But and the Ravens, I mean, have kind of had their way in that rivalry for a while, yeah?
They have, yeah. And in fact, we're going to meet them again Thanksgiving evening.
Nice. Nice. Let me tell you, those hate games are awesome. Those hate games were awesome. So let's talk about – so you're growing up in Pittsburgh. Right. How does the Marine Corps get on your radar?
You know, it's a really funny story, and I'm going to take it back a little bit. I'm going to take it back to college. So in college, graduated from St. Vincent College, small school in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, summer home of the Steelers, ironically.
Yep.
And graduated with a political science degree and thought I wanted to go to law school. So I ended up going to law school, realized about halfway through the semester, man, this is just not for me. So did not do very well. Ended up leaving with the option to come back, and as you can tell, I did not go back.
Right.
But, you know, kind of sat at home and fell into a pretty deep state of depression. You know, I didn't know kind of where I was going, what I was doing. And my dad one day came downstairs. I was living with my parents. And he said to me, you know, what are you doing with your life? You're a college graduate. Go get a job. So I did. And there was a company in Pittsburgh that took a you know, opportunity with me. Did really well. It was a sales-oriented job as a recruiter. Did really well as a recruiter, then bouncing the sales. And then I was honestly the youngest branch manager for the company. So things were looking up. Things were going good. And then we go down to Disney World, and my dad and I, he owned a piece of property in outside of Pittsburgh. And he's like, you know, what am I going to do with this property? So we decided to open a miniature golf course. Well, I'm watching my dad try to manage his business and be a contractor in his job, and he just couldn't do it. So I ended up leaving my job, you know, very well-paying job. And the owner of the company was like, are you crazy? I'm like, maybe. We'll see how it works out. And ended up working with my dad and built a miniature golf course. And then 9/11 happened. And, you know, that feeling that I had that day was something that just I couldn't put it behind me. So,
explain the feeling.
Feeling of power, just pure powerless, anger, just wanting to do something for this country, not really understanding what I could do. But there was a recruiter that was in the area, and he had talked to some of the kids that I work in on the golf course. And so just, you know, on a day, I was going through some life changes, some serious life changes.
And how old are you then?
At this point, I'm 24.
Got it.
All right. So I'm 24 years old. I walked in the recruiter's office, and I'm wearing a suit. I got a goatee, and, I sit down, and he's like, hey, JR, what's going on? I'm like, what's going on, buddy? He's like, what are you here for? I'm like, well, tell me about this Marine Corps thing. You know, I want to kind of know, I've heard you talk to some folks, and I just want to know kind of what this Marine Corps thing is all about. And he's like, well, who are we talking about? I'm like, well, how about me? And he's like, aren't you like 40? I'm like, no, dude, I'm 24. He's like, what do you weigh? I'm like, I weigh 310 pounds. He's like, yeah, that's going to be a problem. He's like, there's just no way. I'm like, well, what do I need to do? He's like, drop about 100 pounds, over 100 pounds, and come back to me. So that next year I did. The next year I dropped over 100 pounds, and I came back to him and said to him, all right, man, I'm serious now. He's like, all right, let's do this. He's like, what's your run time? I'm like, I don't know. I've been on a track forever. So long story short, it lasted another 6 months or so in the DEP program, DEPed in 2003. And I was supposed to go to have an intel contract, and I ended up getting hurt. I broke my finger right before I was going to MEPS. So that contract went away. And then
over a broken finger?
Well, yeah, it was one of those things, you know, ended up going MEPS open contract. So I went down to MCT open contract. So I'm sitting at MCT. My name gets called, Vlasic, tanker. I'm like, huh, that's cool. What kind of tanks? Propane tanks, gas tanks, fuel tanks? I'm like, no, dumbass. Main battle tanks. I'm like, oh, okay, I can do this. From that day on, I fell absolutely in love with the vehicle. And then when I got out to the community and I saw what Marine Corps tankers are and who we are, it was just incredible. My life was changed.
So wait a
forever.
Minute. So you enlisted?
I did. I did 5 years enlisted.
Whoa. I got to the rank of sergeant. Why didn't you go the officer route?
Because I was fat and I couldn't run, and I knew I was going to get eaten up at OCS. So I needed some time. And plus I wanted to kind of go the enlisted route.
I wanted
to see kind of what it was all about. And I didn't understand the officer side. The funny thing is, talking to the recruiter, he didn't know I had a degree. I never kind of told him that. And about, you know, 11th hour going through the process, he's like, wait a minute, you have a degree. I'm like, yeah. He goes, man, I'm not even supposed to be talking to you. He's like, I got to get you in touch with the OSO. So I talked to the OSO, and OSO's like, what's your runtime? I'm like, barely passing. He goes, okay, why don't you stay enlisted? You can do this, and then if you want to go officer, you can do officer later. So that's what I did. And I finally made it to I went to armor, you know, Fort Knox was where the armor school was at the time.
Right.
So 2004, I went to Knox, and loved every minute of it. You know, just knew I had made a home, and was extremely happy, and just the community from day one was just incredible. And then I ended up at Second Tanks. So I'm at Second Tanks, and I get there day one. A guy by the name of Gunnery Sergeant Daniel, he's now retired Master Gunnery Sergeant. He saw my name coming in, and he looked at my age, and he's like 27. He's like, holy smokes, this guy's old. He goes, you know what? I'm gonna make him my driver. So he did. He put me on his tank. And funny story about that. So here I am, you know, college graduate, you know, law school dropout, and I'm driving on a tank. I'm in the lowest billet possible. And I just, you know, for the life of me, I just couldn't figure out how to shut my brain off. And what I mean by that is during gunnery, okay, we'd get on range, and I would think that I want to go left. I think I want to go right. And you know, gunny's yelling at me, stop going left. I'll give you instructions. I'll tell you where to go. Stop doing it. So there was a night gunnery where we're supposed to have a night optic. He took my optics out, and he's like, listen, you're going to drive this tank for this. And this, I mean, it's downrange. It's live fire. Right. And he's like, you're not going to have optics. He goes, you're going to drive by feel and by the sound of my voice. And I did. And from that day on, I learned to trust my tank commander, trust my leaders, and do what I'm supposed to told when I'm told how to do it. And it was a huge leadership lesson for me. It was a huge leadership lesson. Just trust the system, trust the people, trust your leaders, and you'll get through it. And actually, I drove better that night than I ever did before. So now he takes me on a Mew. We go on a Mew. We go on a MedPack Mew, and it was just awesome. I mean, not a lot of combat, but got to train open terrain with the Jordanians. Got to go across the desert, and you know, seeing that formation, you know, and seeing the picture. Obviously, I didn't see it. I was in driver's hole. But seeing the pictures that were like all over the news at the time of, you know, just the entire MAGTAF, you know, joint operations, you know, sister services, sister countries left and right of us, just this huge formation. I mean, it was just mind opening, and I loved every second of it. So we ended up coming back, and then got promoted, you know, the normal route, got corporal.
Hold on. I got an email for you.
All right.
Mac, he just said he lost 100 pounds. Most people do that in a lifetime. How did he do it? What was his secret? So give everybody some weight loss advice. How do you do it?
Number one, I was dedicated. Okay. Number one, I absolutely was dedicated. Number two, I seeked medical assistance in that. I went to bariatrics. So I went to a bariatric doctor, and under the care of a bariatric doctor. I went and saw them every week. It was extremely expensive, but remember,
explain that to people when you're talking bariatric. What do you tell everybody what you're talking about?
So it was blood work weekly. So they were monitoring my levels weekly, and it was vitamin injections. So I was getting a direct dose of vitamin B, vitamin D, and it was extremely strict dieting. I mean, like to the point where every single calorie was counted. And for the week, they would design for me by almost leaf of the lettuce, how much food I was going to eat. And, you know, for most people, they couldn't do it. But at that point, like I said, I was dedicated to representing this country. I was dedicated to doing anything I could to quell that burning sensation in my stomach. And I will tell you, after 17 years, it hasn't gone away. And that's probably, when I retire, that's probably going to be the one thing that's going to be the hardest to kind of get over, is the fact that I still feel the same as I did that day. That day we lost all those people, and the day that the United States was attacked, you know, it still is something that I hold very dear to my heart. It's a life changing day for me. But bottom line,
I will tell you this though, it just depends on what you do. If you do something that allows you to lead and influence people and continue to contribute, you won't feel that. You won't miss it. Let me just tell you, I didn't really script my life. And what I do now is I've developed this program called Post-Traumatic Winning. Mm-hmm. And, I teach people essentially that have gone through significant trauma in their lives, how to go from that traumatic place to a joyful place. And so I continue to lead. And I'm going to tell you, Peter Drucker, the author of so many, you know, corporate management, you know, how-to books and things like that. When he was 65, he had written a third of what he would write. Mm. So I would tell you, using the Drucker model and my own experience, your best days are ahead of you. You just got to find it. Whatever.
I just got to grow up.
Well, no, the key is don't. Don't submit to the endurance model of I'm going to go here. You've already done it once, which was say, fuck it. I'm going to, and I did the same thing. I was an account executive for Merrill Lynch. Right. And it sucked, man. I had a degree in economics. I'm working in Los Angeles, you know, and I could see the road, and it's like, I hate it. I thought they were unethical guys. Within 90 seconds of you being new and putting your statements on the ground, on the floor, on a table or whatever, on their desk, they had already assessed what they could move, how much mm-hmm. profit they were going to make. And that was a deal because it was all commission-based. So I have to move your money to make money. And I watched them do things that people didn't need done in their portfolios. But I got told, you've got to get over that, okay?
Right.
And so I walked in. I was getting my federal income tax forms, going into a federal building in Van Nuys, California. And I, Gunny standing in the doorway smoking a cigarette in his Bravos, sees me in my, you know, my navy blue, you know, pinstripe, mm-hmm. you know, suit with the white shirt and red tie and the cordovan loafers. And he looks at me, right. he goes, what's going on? I said, nothing, man. How are you doing? He goes, good. He said, interested in joining the Marine Corps? And I looked at him and I said, if I was, would I talk to you? And he just goes, nah, man, I was just joking with you. I said, I'm not. And he goes, whatever, dude. You don't need to waste my time because I messed with you. I'm like, I'll be back. And he takes a cigarette, takes a drag off it, and he says, yeah, you will. So I go get my forms, and I come walking in. Now he's in the office. I walk in the office, and I said, hey, do I talk to you if I'm interested? And he goes, are you serious? And I said, yeah. I said, can I have one of those posters too? Because I like that poster. And he goes, you can have a poster. He goes, are you really serious? I said, yeah. And he says, all right, let me ask you a question. You have a college degree? I said, I do. And he said, what was your GPA? I said, I don't know, 2.9, 2.87 with a lot of personality. He said, you play any sports? I said, yeah. He said, were you a captain? I said, yeah. He said, hold on. So I don't know. Like, I'm just sitting there, right? I don't know shit about the military. And mm-hmm. so he calls the OSO, and he's arguing about getting credit for me. And I didn't know, like, what's he talking about?
Right.
And so, but no, I have a very similar story. And it taught me a great lesson, which is don't be afraid to strike out on your own to do what you want to do, because that's the secret to living, you know, to continuing to live, I would say, what is the Marine experience. And that is being around committed people who are relentlessly committed to the pursuit of winning.
Absolutely.
And that's what's different about the Marine Corps, because the Marine Corps as a corporation has people like us who say, fuck right. it. And when people look at you and say, oh, you can't do that, the consistent refrain from Marines is, who the fuck said? If right. you want to see something done, just tell a group of Marines, yeah, you can't do that. Oh, fuck, it's gonna happen. I tell a story.
You know, I mean,
I tell a story when we were in Ramadi, when we ripped with the 82nd Airborne in February, March of 2004. The 82nd Airborne, who owned the battle space, they said, yeah, we don't go here in Fallujah mm-hmm. except on combat operations. We don't go here in Ramadi except in combat operations. We mm-hmm. don't go here in Karma except in combat operations. We don't. We towed, right, where we took control at 0001 on whatever day it was. Mm-hmm. At 0001 and 1 second, Marines went into every one of those fucking places. Right?
Absolutely.
Because we got told we couldn't go there.
That's what we do.
Exactly. And the corporation, to include our supply people, logisticians, right? And it's what makes it such an intoxicating experience that we don't get over, is filled with us. And right. so I'm just telling you, just keep practicing the same fucked up model that you had when you left your miniature golf course and lost 100 pounds, and you will never want for the Marine Corps experience, because you'll be continuing to live it.
Thank you.
No, I mean, I'll tell you what, I didn't know this was going to be part of this story, but, you know, not too many people in their life say that I lost 100 pounds. And you see stories about recruits doing it, right? 100 pounds. Mm-hmm. This guy lost 200 pounds. And you're like, holy shit, man. Well, that's a life. How much has it changed your life?
Oh, forever. Right. I mean, I'm never going to be that person. I mean, I look at pictures. I go back to pictures before that, and I'm like, who is this guy?
Yeah, what the
like,
fuck?
Why did I let, you know, why did
what
I
was your go- Hey, what like, was your go-to food when you were a fat man?
Pizza.
Pizza.
Lots and lots of pizza.
What kind of pizza?
I would order a calzone, and I would order a pepperoni pizza, and I would eat both.
Just a pepperoni pizza?
Yeah, man, just crushed it.
You know what? That's my favorite pizza. My favorite pizza is Pizza Hut pepperoni lovers pizza with thin crust and a little buttery garlic crust on that. That's nice. My favorite. That's my go-to pizza. But I can't eat wheat. I can't eat a lot of wheat because my body doesn't tolerate it well, so which is a bummer. So, wow. That's a lot of pizza, man. I'm not going to lie to you. All right. Well, anyway, you were going to make a comment before I interrupted you.
I was just going to move on to that deployment was amazing in and of itself. And then we got back to second tanks. And
this is what, 2003, 4?
This was 4 going into 5.
Got it.
And I did not go to Phantom Fury, which was probably the most notorious and influential battle of modern day tank history.
Right.
However, the unit that got back after that, they had a combat in, or no, I'm sorry, they had an injury and they were about ready to deploy. And a guy by the name of Gunner Sergeant Jules, Chris Jules, I knew him, good dude. He's the one that's on the Discovery Channel documentary. He had a three tank commander, Chris Campos, and Chris and I were really good friends. We were both sergeants at this point. And normally, as a sergeant, you have your own tank. And Chris came to me and was like, "Hey, man, I just had my gunner get hurt." He's like, "I need a gunner." He's like, "I know you're supposed to go on the next pump as a TC, but tank commander." He goes, "But would you be my gunner?" I'm like, "Brother, I'd do anything in the world for you. Absolutely, I'll be your gunner." So in that platoon, Gunny Jules had his three tank as a sergeant TC and a sergeant gunner. And I told the story during his interview on the YouTube channel, but very first day in theater, and we're in Fallujah, and it's still hot. It's still the Fallujah that everyone thinks of.
Whereabouts in Fallujah?
We were actually in Fallujah, so we were operating, but we did have a Nia Fallujah from the train station
up
north
and down.
South,
okay,
deal.
So up and down Route Michigan, deal. and then
yeah, Mike Michigan, Henry, Fran, the whole deal.
Right, and then were you stationed at the train station, or where did you work out?
We were stationed at the train station, but not – actually, you know what? It was – we did go out of the train station that time because when we ripped out of the train station and then went down to Camp Fallujah. We actually were QRF coming out of Fallujah for the majority of the deployment. But very first night, we're left seat, right seat. And Chris being who Chris is, he's like, "Hey, I'm not going to let somebody gun for me that I don't know." So he had me gun. So you got a new gunner, a new TC with the old TC, doing left seat, right seat, for giving the people familiarization.
How do you do that? Wait a minute. So how do you have that? So is it your driver too? And it's just
him
riding in a loader? How do you do that?
So Chris was in the loader's hatch, and his TC was in there, and he had me in there as a gunner to give me familiarization as well. And we ended up hitting an IED, and that IED was, it wasn't real significant. I mean, it was, it was significant enough, but hell, we're inside of a tank, it rattled our world a little bit. But, that was my opening bell to realize that, hey, this is for real. We're in combat. This is it. And getting out of that tank after that mission, Gunny Jules will come walking up to me and he's like, "Hey, Pickle, how you doing?" I'm like, "You know what, guns? I'm all right." And I was. And once again, I trusted my leadership because he was there. And I knew that, hey, the team that he had built and who we were, we were going to be all right. And we did, thankfully we brought everybody home. Some people were banged up, but everybody came home from that deployment. And we did some work. We did some serious work in that town.
Yeah. I got there after you. I got there in 2006. And it was still an exciting place. But right. I'll tell you what, the progress that had been made, was huge. If you would have told me in 2004 that I would have seen what I saw in 2006, I would have said you're crazy. Mm-hmm. So now you're enlisted sergeant. When do you go to OCS? How does that thing happen?
So I was hotshot gunner for the battalion, and I was in the three shop. So I was working with the battalion master gunner in the three shop. I was supposed to go.
Well, hold on. Explain hotshot, because people just think you're saying, "Yeah, I was really good."
So scoring is very competitive in tanks, and as tankers we are competitive by nature, and then internally we're even more so. So there's three different levels. There's basic qualification, superior, and then distinguished. But of that distinguished, somebody's going to be number one. That number one is the hotshot gunner for the battalion. That is the gunner that during that evolution has the best score in the battalion. And just so happened to be me, but I had shot with the XO, Battalion XO. So as his gunner, I shot with a different TC, and then I became his gunner. So hotshot gunner goes to the XO. The battalion master gunner, who is the senior enlisted master gunner. Master gunners are subject matter experts on tanks. We don't have warrant officers. So the school we send our tankers to is Master Gunner School.
And that's just so everybody knows, it's a big deal. Right?
It's a huge deal.
When you're the master gunner in an organization, you are the technical expert. You are the answer person. They're normally great dudes, too, with great experiences. And not only, you know, again, there's a couple of components to that job. You can be a technical expert, but you got to also be a good leader. And because you have incredible influence in the organization because of your technical expertise, but it doesn't work unless you have the personal skills to mentor, coach, and influence people. So they're huge, huge influences in a battalion.
Absolutely, 100% agree. So I'm in the 3 shop, and I'm sitting there, and one day I'm getting ready to go to Master Gunner School myself, and a guy by the name of Major Shulman walks in the office. He's a battalion XO, and he's like, "Hey, Vlasic." I'm like, "Yes, sir." He goes, "You have a degree." "Yes, sir, I do." He's like, I was like, "You know, I've had a degree." I didn't say that to him, but in my back of my mind, I'm like, "Roger." He's like, "You need to be an officer." And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm not really sure I want to do that." And he's like, "That's exactly why you need to be an officer." He goes, "You would be a damn good one." He goes, "And you have the right mindset." He goes, "Hey, you two lieutenants, put together his package, put together his enlisted commissioning package. I want him on desk by Monday." He walks out. And I'm like, "All right, I guess I just got directed to do something." So long story short, we put the package together, and I never in 1,000 years expected to get accepted. Well, lo and behold, board releases, and there's my name on the list. I'm going to OCS. So I called the wife, and I'm like, "Hey, babe, we're going to Virginia." And she's like, "All right, at least I'm going to Virginia." And she's like, "What?" I'm like, "Yeah, I just got accepted to OCS." She goes, "I didn't know you applied." I'm like, "Well, yeah, I kind of probably should have told you about that. My bad." So anyway, I ended up going to OCS, and at TBS I got hurt real bad. And
what happened?
Fractured dislocation of my wrist on the obstacle course.
All right. That's again, that's not a unique experience to you. I mean, a lot of people get. I just talked to a girl who's doing mental health out here. She's a Naval Academy grad and had a crush injury at the basic school.
Mm.
And then how long did you stay in my company?
I was in my company for way too long, and the reason this is important is because it comes to pay back dividends when I go out to 29 Palms. So I'm in my company. I'm losing my mind. I'm bored out of my mind. I walk into –
Hold on. For everybody, my company's the holding company at the basic school, just so everybody knows.
Yeah, and I was doing nothing. And, you know, as a prior guy, prior tanker that, you know, I'm used to working hard. Doing nothing is like the worst thing for me.
And so, but doing nothing in my company. So what are you doing? You're like helping out. You're doing, you know,
working out, cleaning the gym, just, right. You know, just all kinds of just meaningless BS. And I walked into the head shed and I grabbed the first officer I could find. I'm like, "Hey, sir." And you know, they're all sirs. Cause at that point you're the lowest man in the totem pole. And I'm like, "Hey, sir, can I get a job?" And he's like, "What?" I'm like, "I'm in my company. I'm in a sling. You know, I'm all slinged up. And I'm first of 2 surgeries. And I'm like, I'm going to be here for a long time. I'm like, I need to do something. Please put me to work. Just let me do something." And he's like, "Go down and see the protocol officer." So I went down to the protocol officer and I'm like, "Sir." He's like, "Yep, you're injured. I need somebody. Sit down." He's like, and then he found out I was prior enlisted. He goes, "Oh, you know what? The Marine Corps ball's coming up. Have you ever run a ball?" And I'm like, "Yes." And he's like, "Good. Good, you're going to run the TBS ball." So I did, and I ended up getting to know the CO very well at the time. And
who
extremely
was it?
Well. General Smith now, General George Smith, but at the time Colonel George Smith.
Yeah.
And I got to know him, and people fear the man. I mean, and rightly so. He's a very intimidating individual. You know, wicked smart, just absolute professional. Top of his craft, whole deal. Right. So I get to know him. I get to talk to him. We talk tanks, the whole deal. And I did a really good job for my guests, and he was very happy. Well, I get into Delta Company, and going through, you know, I had some issues with the SBC. He and I just didn't get along. He's just oil and water, whatever reason.
Right.
So last week at TBS, MOS has come out, Military Occupational Specialty has come out, and I have ground supply. And I'm like, what? So I put in the exceptional qualification package, didn't get accepted. Which I don't know how you can be a combat veteran, 5 years in tanks, sergeant, and not get accepted. But I didn't. Well, that week I was really kind of bummed. I'm like, man, this is going to suck. And lo and behold, a few days later, tank slots opened up and my name changes to Tanks. And I'm like, Until today, he will never admit that he did it. But at mess night, I'm happy, man. I've been there for almost a year and a half, and I probably drank a little more than I should have. And I walked up to him and I said, Hey, sir, I said, I appreciate what you did. And he's like, well, you know, you're a tanker. He goes, you know, you live and breathe Tanks. He goes, it's the right thing. And I said, well, if I can ever help you out, let me know. And he smiled at me, and it, you know, it's a very powerful smile. That, so fast forward, I'm now out of first Tanks. When I get there, the XO, Ron Storr, Colonel Ron Storr, who at the time he was in a major. He's like, hey, you're the XO. You're the XO of the company. Like day one. I'm like, great. He's like, you're prior listed tanker. You know, it's all the same. You've been here, done that. You were out here on the East Coast. You're now the XO. So I was the XO for the company. And we do a tour with them. We do a rock clearance tour with the company. And I see General Smith, now the MACTAF TC, McCaxey 29 Palms commanding general, at the Oak Club. He's like, hey, Vlasic. Or actually, I'm sorry, that's a lie. I didn't go see him. And it was Halloween. And my kids, I wanted to go see him. I wanted to go up and say hello to him. And the other officers in the company or in the battalion were like, hey, you know, I think I was a captain or lieutenant at the time. Hey, lieutenant, you got no business going to see the general. So I didn't. I didn't go up and see him. Halloween comes around. My kids want to go up there and to the general's house. I go up to the general's house. Who's on the front porch? General George Smith. J-Har, what are you doing here? Sorry, I live right down the road. What? And you even come see me? Sorry, I was told not to. What? Who told you not to? That's BS. Come here. You know, we start talking. Fast forward a couple months. Now I see him at the Oak Club. And he's like, hey, Vlasic, I need an aide. That's all he says and walks away from me. Well, I didn't know what to do with that, so I didn't do anything with that. I had orders to TTCG coming out of Tactical Training Exercise Control Group coming out of First Tanks. And I didn't do anything. Well, I see him again a couple days later. He's like, hey, I told you I needed an aide. I need you in my office. Well, I'm like, aye, sir. He's like, be in my office on Tuesday. Tuesday morning I show up. Staff sec comes running up to me. I don't know who you are or what you are or what this is all about. He goes, but this is not the way we do business. You're the aide. Sit down. And I'm like, excuse me? He's like, you're the aide. Sit down. He's like, we didn't do an interview. This is not the way we're supposed to do things. He goes, the general said he wants you and general's going to have you. Sit down. I call back the first Tanks and I'm like, I'm not coming back. What do you mean you're not coming back? I'm like, I kind of got a job. So I ended up working for him. And then I ended up working for General Berger as well. We did a switch over. And then I went out to Tactical Training Exercise Control Group as a Coyote. And that's really where I got to see Tanks in their glory.
All right.
And being, you know, I when I got there as an XO, I kind of had a fires background, kind of understood, you know, the word fist, kind of how the MACTAF is supposed to operate. But really being out there with all those experts, because TTCG is just an organization of pure experts. Everybody there is top of their craft, and they are, if they're not an expert, they're soon going to be. And that was my case. I don't think I was anything special, but I had a desire to learn. So I linked up with the infantry guys and was like, hey, man, tell me about this fist thing. So I sat down with them and I spent a lot of extra time, you know, kind of like the fourth string quarterback, you know, going through drills. And that's what I did. I as much knowledge as I could gain, I gained every second of it and the whole deal. So I ended up running the fist package for the tanks. Being up on that hill, seeing those absolutely magnificent beasts lead a MAGTAF, and seeing that tank fist up on that hill orchestrating the indirect fire, the aviation, the direct fire, the breach, the MCLIC, seeing all that come together. And when it comes together, it is just the most beautiful thing you can absolutely possibly imagine. It is pure freedom, pure power, pure dominance. There is nothing in this world that could go up against that. And that's what I did. I had the absolute pleasure of running those tank macs from the fist perspective. And I mean, I just loved every second of it. And, you know, the love I had for tanks prior to that, 100 time fold after that. So then I had to leave that job.
So what happens when, you know, you hear that tanks are going to go away?
You know, the best way that I can kind of describe it is, well, first of all, it was a surprise. No, I mean, you know, from tanks inception back in 1923, you know, tanks have always been, you know, heavy, logistically demanding, right. Blah, 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 blah. You know, a million reasons why we shouldn't have tanks until the day comes when you need a tank.
Right.
because I will stand on this till the day I die. There is nothing in our arsenal right now that can replace a tank. When you need a tank, you need a tank. You don't need aviation. You don't need indirect fire. You need a tank. And I will stand behind that because I've been there. And I've lived that both in combat, and I've seen it play out in multiple occasions. Now, that is not to say that I'm questioning the Commandant's decision. And that was really the number one rule when I created the YouTube channel that I instilled. My number one rule was the Commandant has made a decision. The service has made a decision. We don't necessarily have to like the decision, but we absolutely are going to respect it. We're not going to challenge it. We're not going to question it. The decision has been made. So from day one, the YouTube channel kind of was angled towards, okay, we're gonna show respect to our legacy, because when you try to look for the history of Marine Corps tankers, there's not a lot out there, and there's a reason behind that. The reason behind that is our legacy is written on the infantry walls. We support the infantry as Marine Corps tankers, and this is a huge difference between Marine tanks and Army tanks. You know, everyone looks at a tank and thinks it's the same. Number one, they're not. Number one, you know, technologically wise and just pure vehicle wise, they're very different. M1A1 is a very different vehicle from an M1A2, you know, V3SEP. It's a very difficult, very, very different vehicle. But that isn't really what makes the difference between a Marine Corps tank and an Army tank. The major difference is the fact that Marine Corps tanks are combat service support. Our sole purpose in life up until this year was to support the infantry in everything that they do. So when that infantry commander, whether it be, you know, squad all the way up to regiment, calls for his tanks, he knows when he gets Marine Corps tanks, we are wearing the same uniform, we speak the same language, we are there to support them in anything and all things. That is what makes Marine Corps tanks special. So I forget kind of where I was going with that. It was kind of a tangent, but
so your history is kind of dispersed. That's what you
were,
and it's written on
the infantry walls. Got so it. when you look for a Marine Corps tank history, you have to go to the infantry and see the supporting battles. And oh, by the way, Marine tanks have been in every single battle since 1923. We've been in every war, every major conflict, every battle since 1923. But you're not gonna find that blatantly displayed because, like I said, it's on the infantry walls. So that was the purpose of the channel. The purpose of the channel was to provide some type of a means, some type of mechanism to capture our lineage, our history, and just tell some stories about what makes tanks special, about what makes, you know, the
so how does this how does this idea come to you when you, so you know you're facing the loss of your MOS, I mean the loss of this, you know, this thing that has been, you know, from, you know, iconic pictures during the Second World War, you know, the flame tanks in the Pacific, on, you know, the incredible footage that you see in you know, flame tanks on Iwo Jima and doing in close combat, and the legacy of this, you know, the squad phone on the back and all of that, to their time in Vietnam, to their time in, you know, their dominance in Desert Storm, their incredible, you know, contributions, in Iraq and Afghanistan, dare I say. So all that's going away. It must have been stunning for your community. I mean,
it's like a loss of a loved one. Right. I mean, you know, seeing the battalions roll up the guidons is like a funeral. It's absolutely akin to a funeral because we are, it's a loss of a community.
And it's different. And it's different than, I mean, first, I mean, we've seen infantry regiments go away. 4th Marines, 9th Marines has come and gone. And we've rolled those colors and the legacy of those great organizations and their combat lineage and all of that. But it's not like infantry went away. I mean, what's right. unique about this has been a major arm of Marine Corps combat arms that is now it's not moving to the reserve. It is not, you know, it is simply gone. And so, I mean, so the path that you guys walk is much different from many other organizations because there is nothing left. Or going to be nothing left.
I'm going to answer your question in twofold. The story about how the YouTube channel came about, and I'll make it quick. I was going through school as executive leadership, getting my master's, and you know, one of the things they talked about was online content. You got to have online content. So I got on LinkedIn. Well, actually, I didn't get LinkedIn. I kind of started researching a little bit, and I found a gentleman out of Australia who had on there, if you have a story to tell, it's your obligation to tell it. And that stuck with me. And then he did another one that said, doesn't matter about the video. Don't worry about the camera. Don't worry about the audio. Don't worry about if you have a story to tell and you have a message to tell, tell it. And that hit me. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to tell it. So I started telling my own story on LinkedIn. I started just you know, going through why, how I came to be. And when, you know, and I'm like, I'm in the shower one day, you know, and I'm thinking about what I'm going to do for the next series and next video. And I'm like, why am I telling my story? Who gives a shit about me? I have an entire community that has just basically had the mic dropped on them. That's after 100 years going away. I got to tell that story. I have to tell that story. Like, that is the story I need to tell. So I kind of put it out there. I put it out there in All Points Bulletin and said, hey, I'm looking to do this. I'm an amateur. I literally am learning how to make a YouTube channel. If anybody wants to come on here and do an interview, please contact me. Well, lo and behold, somebody did. Dan Grazier did. And Dan is a professional. Dan is a retired captain, but he's been involved in lobbying in D.C. for a long time. Been on Fox News, the whole deal. So between him and a guy by the name of Frick Maurizio, a Marine out of New York, and then Jonathan Dunn, another guy on LinkedIn, between those individuals, they've really kind of, you know, helped me work through the mechanics side of it and just kind of how the YouTube channel should be and, you know, ins and outs a little bit. And I'm still learning. I learn every day. You know, I said, opening part of the interview, I'm an amateur. I know that, but I'm okay with that. And I started telling the story, and Dan's interview took off, and you know, it you know, 20 episodes later.
So explain the channel to us. Is it a series of interviews you do? Is it content people send you that then put on the channel? Is it a combination of both? Explain to everybody. And first of all, what's the name of the channel, so people can know how to find it? And then tell us what they'll find on it.
Sure. Name on the channel is 100 Years of Marine Corps Tankers.
Right.
And if you search under YouTube, you can find it. You can also look me up, J.R. Vlasic. But 100 Years of Marine Corps Tankers. All it is a Zoom interview. So it's a one-on-one Zoom interview that I do with the interviewee and ask them a series of questions. And I typically go through their bio. You know, it's just the format that I kind of use. And I ask them questions about, you know, who's influential in their, you know, upbringing and who are key leaders. And if they deployed, ask them about deployments and pull out some, you know, tankerisms and tanker stories, you know, and also have kind of a leadership aspect to it. So, you know, the lessons you learn along the line, how do they translate to today? And also, you know, at the end of it, I give an opportunity. Now, mind you, a lot of the junior Marines have already made their decision. But when I started this, you know, they didn't know what they were doing. And, you know, there wasn't really a clear picture on, you know, the future of those junior enlisted Marines or even the junior officers in that matter. You know, I was pulling question out of all the people that were there. Hey, what's your message to the Marines that are getting out of the Marine Corps today? You know, basically the choices were to MOS transfer, lateral move transfer into a new job, new military occupational specialty, or to inter-service transfer to the Army to stay tanker. A lot of Marines ended up doing that, or quite frankly, get out. I mean, those were really kind of the options. And if they're going to get out, those that have been out for a while, what lessons do you have, you know, having been into the civilian sector for a while and been successful? What do you have to say to those Marines, or more importantly, to the employers? That was the other angle I was working after was, hey, if you're an employer that, you know, has this Marine that basically has a Marine resume and nothing else on it, but it says tanker, what can you expect? Well, what can you can expect is a critical thinker, a hard worker, somebody who's dedicated, somebody who is professional in their craft and willing to learn. That's the biggest thing. Because Marine tankers, we learn all the time. No matter what rank you are, no matter who you are, you learn all the time. That's who you're going to get if you see Marine tanker on that resume. And that was kind of the message of the channel, and is the message of the channel. And then the other question I get often is, how long are you going to do this? You know what, Mac? I'm going to do this as long as I can. As long as there's still interviews and as long as people still contact me and want to tell their story, I'm here, man. Like, I don't know if I'm the right guy to do it, but I'm the guy doing it.
So how does somebody contact you that has a story to tell?
They can email me, pickleusmc at Hotmail. They can get on Facebook.
PickleUSMC at Hotmail.
Yes, sir. I'm probably going to get a bunch of spam right now, but that's all right. It's worth it.
It's all right. That's what you got to do it. And then, and then you tell a story. So what's, give me a couple examples of stories that people contacted you that you would tell people, hey, if you go to, now what's the name, 100 Years of Marine Corps Tanks?
Marine Corps Tankers, yes.
Okay, if you go to 100 Years of Marine Corps Tankers, what's the first interview I should listen to?
Man, you know what? I got asked that the other day, in fact. It was, what's your favorite interview? And I don't know that I have one because they're so different. You know, I have all the way from sergeants.
Okay, give us one to listen to then. How do I craft the question?
All right, either Gunner Sergeant Popovich, because he's pretty pretty influential. He's the cigar Marine, if you remember back from Iraq. He is definitely a good one. Gunny Jules is you know, one that's very near and dear to my heart because he was my TC. Colonel Storer is currently the senior ranking officer to do a interview, and then Sergeant Milo is the junior man. So, you know, I kind of cover the spectrum. And also the most recent one I just published last Friday was the first mechanic. You know, I've been trying to get the 2146s, the tank turret technicians, the mechanics on, and Chief Warrant Officer Ford Lopez got on last week. So he's the first mechanic. He kind of set the bar for all the mechs out there. I love my mech brothers and sisters. You guys are awesome. And you know, I know it says tankers, but you know, in my world, a mechanic is a tanker because they ride on the 88s, and a lot of those guys, believe it or not, have actually tanked. You know, Lopez tells a story of when we took our loaders out and put a mechanic in as a loader. We trained him the whole way through, got him tank commander gunnery school qualified, and put him in the tanks during the combat operations, because what that gives you is the force multiplier.
Right.
You know, all those second echelon repairs that tankers can't do, they can do, and they can do out in the field. And they were, you know, and they absolutely provided force multiplication to us. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of the spectrum right now, I think.
What the, so in terms of if somebody's listening to this, they're a tanker and, you know, they're not sure if anybody wants to hear their story, what do you tell them?
Everybody's got a story to tell. You know, I did an interview with somebody that didn't have any combat deployments. And I'm like, you know what? That's all right, man. Because you know what? You were on the ramp. You were a tanker. You got funny stories, you got important stories, and you know, I said it before, it's like therapy for me. You know, this is a way for me personally to deal with the fact that my MOS is going away. And really the hardest pill I have to swallow, I haven't swallowed yet. Marine tankers, when we do retirements, we do ceremonies, we do them right. I should say we did them right. We got the 120s out there, we crossed them, we hung a flag. You know, you stand in front of the 120s. I mean, that image alone is powerful.
Explain to everybody what the 120s are.
120 is 120 millimeter main battle tank main gun. So we elevate the main guns. We make them like an arch. And, that person of honor is standing in between, you know, front and center of the 120 millimeter main guns. So it's essentially cross guns, but it's a cross tank main battle gun main guns. So, like I said, it's a very powerful image, and that's how we did retirements. Well, guess what? I'm not going to get that, and neither is anybody else.
So you're talking about individual retirements, not unit retirements.
No, I'm talking both. Yeah, right. I'm talking individual retirements.
Got it. So when you would retire,
that's
you will be standing out, and there won't be a tank in sight.
I'm probably going to retire in my backyard. I mean, I don't even know how this retirement's going to go. So, I mean, it's a sad thing, and it's not about me, but I'm just using myself as an example.
Well, that day it kind of is, right?
Yeah.
It is kind of about you and your career. How soon do you retire?
3 years.
In 3 years. All right. So you got time. You got time. Hey, maybe they'll come back.
Maybe. Fingers crossed.
All right. So JR, what haven't I been smart enough to ask you about your YouTube channel that you want to make sure that people know? Because I've gone through it. There's some really cool stuff there. If you've ever been interested at all in Marine Corps tanks, the history of Marine Corps tanks, I mean, you have to go check it out. It's not hard to find. But what haven't I been smart enough to ask you that you want to make sure people know?
So I go against the grain on almost anything that is, you know, YouTube or social media rules, you know, longer than 1 minute, longer than 2 minutes. My videos are long. Some of them are up to an hour.
Right.
It is very niche focused. You know, it is very tanker specific, and that's okay because, like I said before, I didn't do this for notoriety. I didn't do this for myself. I did it for our community, and I will stand on the term that says I'm not sure I'm even the right guy to do this, but I'm the guy doing it right now. So therefore, you guys are stuck with me. I know I have a lot of isms, and you know, my public speaking basically sucks. I'm good with all that because it's not about me. It's about the interviewees. It's about getting their stories out, and just stick with it. Just stick with the video. And if you want to hear tanks and you want to talk tanks, watch the video, contact me, and we're all about it.
Got it. So you don't have a there's no checklist that you have to qualify for. If you've got a story to tell, they should shoot you an email.
I don't care if it's the last class of tankers to be graduated that never really got to tank. Those Marines have a story to tell. They are tankers. In my books, they are tankers. If you went to tank school or you know, any of the tank schools and you earned the MOS, you are a tanker forever. You have a story to tell. Contact me. I'm happy to work with anybody.
Got it. Somebody sent me an email. Mac, I'm curious. They stood down the companies. They stood down the battalions. The tanks are all gone now. So there's no tanks left in the Marine Corps this day, this second. When is that true? I don't know what the status is of the retirement. Has the retirement all been completed?
Yes. For the most part, yes. And wow. The short answer to that is yes. There's a few onesie twosies that are still cleaning up. But you know, Chief Officer Lopez spoke about that. He was at PM's tanks. He was one of the deciders that worked through this. And February ASR dropped, and the Commandant made a decision based on fourth generation that all armor in the Marine Corps will be divested of. And he actually gave the year of 2023, which is why I chose to use 1923 to 2023. Once that decision was made, the PM tanks decided that they were going to execute as quickly as possible. And there's a reason behind that. If we would have held onto the gear and would have kept the battalions open just because the gear was there, we would have held onto Marines as well. So in an effort to best support the junior Marines and those Marines that are making this tough decision, the faster that we as a community were able to divest, freed up those Marines to be able to go off and do other things. So it was a conscious decision to be as aggressive as possible. I asked Master Gunner Sergeant Formella from Second Tanks, good friend of mine, very good friend. He has a great interview as well. He's also one of the great interviews on there. What the battalions are doing with the tanks. And he explained that the display tanks are going to stay. This is from Second Tanks, Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. The display tanks are going to stay at Lejeune and then move to a future location that is currently being in the works. The memorabilia is being transferred from the Marine Corps History Division for the fallen Marines. And Casualty Branch is contacting the next of kin for all that we have, and they're shipping them out. And then most of their pictures are being digitally preserved and scanned. And the rest, which is very slow, they've contacted the historical branch who's come out to the battalions, and they're working through the process. So it's, you know, it's very much akin to a funeral. The same as you got to go through a loved one's, you know, a loved one's belongings. That's what the battalions are doing right now with all the gear and all the photographs and all the memorabilia. So it's a process in place. But the short answer to the question is yes.
Wow. The number one interview on your YouTube channel with 819 views is episode number 4, Made with Clip Champ.
Yeah. Amateur hour there. Captain Blaine Sibby. And he's a comedian, and he can tell a story. Another great interview. I mean, that's what I said. I'd be doing an injustice to pick out one in particular that is kind of, you know, the most, I love Blaine. Blaine's a great dude, and he's a comedian. He is just funny. And I don't know why that's the number one video. It's kind of funny. I've looked at it, and I'm like, man, I love you, Blaine, but why are you the number one? But he is.
What do you think? If you look, if you want an opinion, it's the thumbnail that is the cover.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
When you see it, it's a Marine in his CVC helmet, obviously inside the tank. And
right.
I think the assumption is, whoa, that guy's in combat, so let me check it out. I have no idea, but in looking at you know, at pictures of other guys, normally they're outside, standing next to the tank. This dude's in a tank. Let me check it out. I don't know. Maybe he's got a lot of friends that watch it. Who knows?
But, well, Master Sergeant Chamugin's thumbnail is Symphony of Destruction, which is like one of the most notorious. It's the prototype of the mine roller before the mine roller was the mine roller. And
is that him standing between the two rollers?
Yeah, man, that thing's badass.
It is.
That's a combat picture right there.
But he's only got 529 views.
I know. We got to pump him up.
Clem Champ is killing him. Let me just tell you. I mean, this unique culture, and this is my experience. My whole thing of this thing I've created called post-traumatic winning has come out of the interviews that I've done with Marines, the things they've taught me about, you know, what it is, you know, to live with trauma. And it started when I was CO of Alpha Company, 3rd Light Armored Infantry Battalion, back in 1993, and a helicopter crashes in the middle of my assembly area out in Wood Canyon in 29 Palms. And pilots decapitated, co-pilot crushed to death, and then we're trying to save, in the wreckage, we're trying to save two Marines, and everybody dies. And my company, Gunny, walks up to me 2 or 3 hours later and tells me that you're never going to get over this.
Right.
And that's okay. And I told him to kind of fuck off in very, very direct terms. So kind is probably the wrong word to use. I told him straight up to fuck off. Mm-hmm. And then I asked him, I said, who told you that? And he said, Vietnam guys. And it's good advice. And I always say this, the single best piece of advice that I ever got about mental health, I got from my company, Gunny, and it was 2 to 3 hours after I'd seen somebody decapitated. Mm-hmm. And so this presentation I have, that I now have taken to calling the flat black traumatic wisdom of Marines, predominantly comes from sergeants and below. Some have gotten out. They're older now. They're willing to talk about their experiences and share them. And this unique culture that attracts such unique people, the truth that comes out of it, the stories that come out of it are just as unique as the DNA, like yours is, to lose 100 pounds to walk through the door. It is not your typical branch of the service, in my opinion. And every service branch would argue the same thing. Well, we're not typical either. I'm going to tell you that if you've ever seen Marines fight, you thank God for the day that you decided to join the Marine Corps, because you don't have to look around if there's people going with you, because they'll come and they'll fight and they'll die. And so my experience is the exact same. The stories that they tell about their lives, about the impact of the Marine Corps in their lives, and the things they did, you know, whether it be on active duty or later on, are really amazing. And so to be a storyteller for this organization is, I think, it certainly, I mean, changed my life. And now I spend my days getting other people to see this path from trauma to joy, and that you can walk it. And then not only that, you can teach other people to do it. And it all comes from Marines. And my advice to you would be continue to find ways to deepen and broaden what you do, and then watch what happens, because doors begin to open. And it's my experience after doing this for 4.5 years has been absolutely life changing. So I want to congratulate you. First of all, the channel looks great. On episode number 18, what's 19 going to be about?
19's Captain Tim Dorn, been out of the service for a little bit, but he was influential in fighting Fallujah. And you know, I listened to your interview earlier. I think it was where you talked about. I actually reminded me with me talking about going places where you know, the army wouldn't go. He's the living embodiment of that. You know, the tanks wouldn't patrol. You know, army tanks were in there prior to him getting there, and they wouldn't patrol certain areas. Well, the second he got there, he's like, you know what? F that. We're going through. And he put out – he actually did dispersed command and control where he put platoons out in different areas and had those guys run out from geographically separated areas and operated kind of on their own. So he trusted his own platoon commanders to run those operations as he would. Yeah, it's a great interview. It's really something to come.
Have you ever do you know a guy named Chris Myers?
I do. Very well.
Well, you need to get him on, man. Myers has a great story. Yep. Myers has a story about hopping off his tank in Fallujah, right, in the city. He's a lieutenant. Right. And I think he's a lieutenant at the time. He might be a company commander. I can't remember. He hops off his tank, and some shithead steps out of an alley with his AK, and Myers sees him and takes off running, and this dude opens up. And by the grace of God, Myers doesn't get a scratch.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, he's got – it's a great story. And Chris right. Myers is – he's a smart dude too. And but he's good – he's a great guy and an outstanding officer. And but he's got some incredible stories. I mean, for instance, tanks are so heavy, right, that they were crushing water mains that were running underneath streets in Fallujah. And right. there was flooding in the streets, and there was dead bodies floating in it, and dead dogs, and is, you know, this. So when you hear, you know, the complexities of these operations and what tanks did and what they helped grunts do who were either somehow or the cut off or whatnot. I mean, the stories are crazy, and that's what Chris Myers was doing. And yeah. but somehow or other, you got to get him to come on and talk. So
absolutely.
Anyway, all right, man. First of all. I hope you don't mind if in the future if we have issues that come up relative to tanks, I'll give you a call and you can come back on.
Absolutely. It's been my pleasure. And, Mac, thank you so much for this opportunity. Thank you to your viewers and your listeners. I mean, you guys are awesome. Please take a check out the channel. And like I said, everyone's got a story to tell. Tanker Mac doesn't matter. Contact me, and I'm happy to do it. It's been an absolute pleasure, my friend, and thank you.
Yeah, no, 100 years of Marine Corps tankers. You can find it on YouTube. His name is J.R. Vlasic, Major United States Marine Corps, prior enlisted type. J.R., congratulations. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk to you again.
Absolutely. Semper Fi.
There you go. Semper Fidelis. How about that? Huh? Awesome. No, great stuff. And as I just said, you know, the stories that come from this culture, as you become a storyteller, are awesome. And I know because I do it on a daily basis. And the passion, the intensity, the chip on your shoulder that Marines have is pretty cool. And let me tell you, his story, I didn't know, right? I had no idea that he had lost 100 pounds to join the Marine Corps. I mean, holy smokes, man. Holy smokes. That's a... Again, it's the cool part of being part of a very cool organization. So that'll do it on a Tuesday. Election Day, that's right. If you're just tuning in, we talk about my trip to go vote yesterday. As I was ready for a long wait, there was no wait. And so I voted and came home. Took my flask to make sure I had something to drink and stay hydrated in case I had to stand in line. I didn't need that. So talk about that. Also talk about watching What Killed Michael Brown with my 17-year-old daughter. Interesting conversation. Talk about that. And then some stuff being written about Donald Trump by himself as president of the United States saved big news organizations. And the belief is those news organizations' profits, much like the newspaper business, are continuing to be eroded by different platforms of on-demand media as consumers dictate the course of how technology gets produced and how they use it. So... the article says that, yeah, the media is going to change. Donald Trump just staved that off for a little bit. So we shall see. We shall see. So we talk about that. And then if you're just tuning in, the interview that you just heard is about a YouTube channel called 100 Years Marine Corps Tankers. And that is a pretty amazing story. And so check it out. Not hard to find. 100 Years of Marine Corps Tankers. I want to thank J.R. Vlasic for coming on and talking about his preservation of a piece of Marine Corps culture. So, well done. On a Tuesday, Election Day. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening. Get out there and vote. And then don't be afraid to change somebody's life. Two questions. Can I talk to you? You know there's nothing wrong with you, right? You know that what you're going through is absolutely normal for what you've been through. You know that, right? And with those two questions, you can open a door to a conversation that could be life-changing for somebody. So don't be afraid to do that. On that note, All Marine Radio, out.